All right, folks, you are in boat lifts, elevating customer satisfaction and the bottom line. Hey, we got two more. Good deal. You guys don't be bashful. Come on up toward the front. So I know everybody's going to ask. No, sir. Everybody's going to ask 10 or 12 questions. I'm going to make certain I can hear you. So first things first, I know it's last segment of the day, and so I really appreciate everybody being here. Welcome, and thank you for coming. And so what we're going to talk about today is why your customer needs a boat lift, why you should be the one selling them that boat lift, and how that is going to enhance their experience at your facility, and also how it's going to enhance bottom line, which, unless anybody's doing this for a hobby, everybody's interested in making a little money. So really, there's three reasons that a customer needs a boat lift: protection, convenience, and long-term value of the boat, okay? So first things first, we all know boats are made to play in the water, not stay in the water. So your customer has, with a boat lift, he's securely dry docked, he's protected from wind, wake, he's protected from marine growth, he's protected from electrolysis, which is a biggie, and osmosis, because regardless of the quality of your boat, if it's a fiberglass boat and you leave it in the water long term, through osmosis, water is going to penetrate the hull. It's going to ruin the gel coat first, then it's going to destroy the fiberglass. So nobody wants that. There's also convenience. Consumer knows he can't leave his boat in the water, so what's he going to do? He's either going to trailer it. If he does, he's going to lose time at the boat ramp when he could be enjoying that time. He's going to spend a lot of time cleaning the boat. He's going to have less time on the water. And he's going to have less time at your facility because instead of quickly securing his boat at the end of the day, he's going to take it somewhere and pull it out. Long-term value of the boat, that's really what the customer's after, okay? And it's what you want to help them achieve because they've invested a ton of money in this boat. And so dry storing the boat protects the residual value but prevents all the damage that we talked about earlier. So it doesn't matter what type of marina that you have, whether it's a floating dock, fixed dock, whether you're saltwater, freshwater, there are multiple different boat lift manufacturers, and there are multiple different designs. And typically, the boat lift will emulate the dock, okay? If you have a floating marina, you're going to have floating boat lifts. If you're on a fixed marina, you're either going to use a suspension-type lift, which is cable and post, or you're going to use a freestanding lift that sits on the bottom. It really, the type of equipment matches the application. And with that being said, there are several manufacturers. So there's somebody out there that can help you at your facility. Why should your marina amenities include a boat lift dealership? Well, frankly, consumers are going to hunt a boat lift. They're going to hunt that solution for their boat. Good example, Lake Cumberland in Kentucky. There are multiple marinas on the lake. There are only a handful of private docks. It's a controlled access lake. So the vast majority of the boaters on that lake are using a commercial marina. And a lot of them are coming from out of state, and they're not trailering that boat back and forth. And so they're putting these boats on boat lifts. Okay, well, as the marina owner or owner's group or manager or whatever, you're looking to maximize the revenue on your dockage, okay? Because you're the one that is paying for the insurance, you're the one that paid for the docks, you're the one that's taking the risk, okay? So you should be the first one to profit from your dockage investment. And what that means is if you're not selling them a boat lift, someone else is, okay? Increased revenue from lift sales and rentals. Whether you choose to resell the hoist or whether you choose to lease it, you're going to make money on this deal. But what could be the most important thing, I'm going to laser this guy, is direct control of who's doing work on your dock and the quality of that work. Now, on a freestanding lift, not a big deal because it's really not attached to the dock. It really can't have an impact on your dock. But on a suspension lift that's attached to your dock, or a floating lift that's attached to your dock, a bad installation, which doesn't align the balance point of the lift with the balance point of the boat, yes, it may get the boat out of the water and it may look okay, but you're putting a ton of strain on your dock. Also, it's not making the customer happy. It's maybe not supporting their boat correctly. So really, if you're gonna have boat lifts in your marina, you wanna control the quality of the installation of those lifts. And you also want to, you wanna know who's doing this work, okay? You don't want any Tom, Dick, and Harry on your dock. You want to know that they have insurance, and you want to know that they have workers' comp and all that good stuff. So controlling who's doing the work is very important. Increase customer satisfaction. You become a one-stop shop. And really, that's what you want to be. You don't want to just be the marina guy. If a guy is boating on your lake, you want to be his lake guy. You want to be his one-stop shop. Customer retention, okay? If you're leasing a guy slip and it comes to the end of lease term, and this is going to sound like a gotcha, but it's not a gotcha, it's just reality, okay? If I'm renting a slip from you and it comes to the end of my lease, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe I'd like to be at the south end of the lake, or maybe I'd like to be closer to the falls, or, you know, whatever. For whatever reason, I might want to move. If it's just a boat and all I have to do is power that boat to another marina or power that boat to a ramp and pull it out, that's a pretty easy decision to make. However, if I've got a boat lift attached to your dock, I'm going to spend a substantial amount of money to get that removed, to get it taken with me, to get it reinstalled. It becomes a much harder decision to leave the facility that you're at. So customer retention. The other thing is added convenience equates to more customer time at your facility, okay? If a guy's got a boat lift, he's not going to the ramp, he's not leaving, he's not going somewhere else with that boat. At the end of the day, he's coming back to the dock. And that means he's more than likely shopping in your ship store, or eating in your restaurant just a little bit more. So at the end of the day, having a customer on a lift is going to equate to more time with them at the facility, which is what you want to maximize. Especially if a guy's coming out of state, bringing his family. Anytime he's not on the lake, on the water, where do you want him? You want him at your facility doing business with you. If I go too fast, or if you have a question, just let me know, okay? So, who has a boat lift dealership? And how's that working out for you so far? Okay. Do you only sell lifts, or do you lease lifts, or do you do a little bit of both? Only selling? Okay. You got it. I'm sorry? Well, let's talk about that. Okay, if you sell the lift, that's how you get the most immediate quick return, okay? Because typically, regardless of the manufacturer, you've become the middleman, okay? And which is okay. There's, you know, middleman's key to capitalism. Tons of manufacturers, tons of consumers. There's tons of people in between them that sell stuff, okay? So being the middleman means that you get a piece of the action when it's sold. We talked about that. It's your dock. You should be getting a piece of the action, okay? So when you sell the lift, depending on the size and depending on the, and by size, I mean the capacity of the hoist, which will correlate to the dead weight of the boat or the wet weight of the boat, you're going to make instant return on that. And typically, depending on the size, that's anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000, depending on the size of the boat lift. You can actually make more money on the lift if you're leasing it versus selling it. You don't make it as quickly, but you get more opportunities on that same piece of equipment to make money, okay? If you lease it, the national average is a 3-year buyback, okay? So you take your total cost, divide it by 36, and that's what you set up the lease payment around. So at the end of 3 years, you've been made whole, other than the interest you lost on the money. But with most quality boat lifts, you can reasonably expect 15 years service out of that piece of equipment, okay? So after that 3-year buyback period, you got a 12-year cash cow. As long as you maintenance a little bit, keep an eye on it, make certain that it's set up correctly for whatever boat's going on it. Lift's going to perform pretty well. You're going to get 12 years return on that initial investment. The other thing is, at the end of 3 years, you've made your money back on that lift. You can sell it and for a profit and replace it with a new one. You can turn your inventory over or keep your rental fleet new. So there's different ways to make money on the boat lift. And again, this is going to sound like a gotcha, but it's reality. Boat lifts, in general, if they're in good working order, they retain their value. And they typically, a five-year-old boat lift is typically worth about 70% of what the consumer paid for it, assuming it's in good condition. Well, when do people want to sell lifts? Normally at the end of their lease agreement. But sometimes they like to get a head start. So in the fall, when they're done for the season, they'll start wanting to get rid of that lift because they're either getting out of boating or they're getting a different boat or they're going to a different area. So you have a chance. Then all of a sudden, you have a buyer that's in the wrong time of year or a seller that's in the wrong time of year, and you're a convenient buyer. You got the money. You just negotiate and you say, look, this lift is worth X dollars in the spring, but in the fall, it's worth less because you're going to have to sit on it. So you get an opportunity to get a second bite of the apple, that same piece of equipment that you sold the first time. And really, it just really depends on the age of the equipment, what time of year it is, how much that can be, but it's not unrealistic to buy that thing for 50 cents on the dollar of what it's actually worth. And really, you're not gouging your customer, you're doing him a favor because he's getting out of it and he's, you know, hassle-free and gone. And he got a return on it while he was using it. And then, you know, you either add that to your rental fleet or you turn around and resell it. It's really up to you at that point. Probably the, any questions on any of that? Yes. It varies, really. I've seen marinas. Leasing lifts is really big in Texas, okay? And I'm talking about floating lifts primarily. But it's really big in Texas, and you'll see a lot of three-year lease deals. And so with a three-year lease deal, you're automatically being made whole at the end of that three-year period. But that doesn't mean that you're tied to that. I mean, if you've got a good customer base and you feel comfortable, you can do a one-year deal. The key is mapping out for yourself how long a term you're willing to accept on the payback. And in different markets, it may be 4 years. If it were me, I wouldn't want to get more than 4 years. And then the length of the lease term really also depends on the strength of your market base. If you've got a marina that's running at 95% of capacity and you're selling lifts and people are also renting, if you have demand, then you may be comfortable with a one-year term or a two-year term versus a longer term. And you're really just going to have to kind of fine-tune that to your individual marketplace. But either way, as long as you have the capital on the front end to do a lease program, you're going to make more money long run in the lease than you are in the sale. You're just not going to make it as quickly. I'm sorry?
Using lifts as an option for winter storage for boats on the water. Would you recommend that?
Yes. It depends on the marketplace, okay? If you've got cable and post lifts, like if you're up north and it's shallow water, you know, a lot of the waters up north will freeze. A lot of the docks get pulled out. But if you've got permanent dockage, then depending on the style of dock and the style of lift, yes. In the south, that's common. A lot of folks leave their boat on their lift year-round, whether it's a marina or a private dock.
So as far as the winter, would you stay with a fixed lift or a floating dock?
Again, I would match the lift to the dock. If you're on a fixed dock, you're typically going to be in shallower water. And so, you know, a lot of times a cable and post or a bottom standing lift is going to be a better option. It depends on how much it freezes and whether or not the ice shifts. Okay, that's why there's a lot of companies that make Rolodox that you can take out at the end of every season. Anyone from up north? When I say up north, really, where are you guys located?
New Jersey.
And what type of dock do you have?
Easy Docks.
Easy Docks. And do you leave those in year-round? So they just freeze in? And you don't have shifting ice, so it doesn't damage them?
Not where we are.
Okay. Well.
Not usually. Not typically. But, you know, Mother Nature concerns us.
Exactly. What about you, sir?
Massachusetts. All Florida, Polydock.
And so what type of docks do you have?
Polydock.
Polydock, okay. And do you leave those in or pull them out?
We leave them in.
And they just freeze in?
Yep.
Okay. Right. Well, so it really comes down to how much the ice is going to move. You know, when it freezes, the poly dock or an easy dock, either one can really rise because as that ice forms, it gets taller. It can just pick that dock right up. You may or may not be able to leave the boat lift in that environment. And especially, you're going to want to consider that before you leave a boat on it. Exactly. And those are, I'm assuming, the poly dock I know is uncovered. Is your easy dock, do you have the cover on it, or is it uncovered? Yeah. So a lot of folks don't want to leave their boat in the element like that year-round, especially if it's going to rain full or freeze full, you know. But right. Well, what's going to be the determining factor is the style of lift. If it's shifting ice, then a floating lift or a bottom standing or a freestanding lift probably isn't going to be the best option for that. Cable and post lift really doesn't make any difference because it's on pilings that are pounded in the ground. And as long as you get the boat above the water level, the ice isn't going to make any difference.
But it's interesting. I grew up on Lake Minnetonka.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Irrespective of how they put it. And the only way around it at our yacht is we bubbled the marina during the winter to keep it from taking out the pilings again.
And that's where the shift in ice can be a deal breaker.
Right.
And you know, with floating lifts in particular, the further north we go, we caution our customers. It can freeze in and it won't really hurt it with the polyethylene tanks. Unless you have significant movement of that ice, and at that point, we don't recommend it. The same thing would be true with a freestanding lift. Cable and post lift, if the pilings can survive it, the lift really isn't going to be affected at all. Any other questions on that? Did that answer your question, sir? All right, so everybody understands why a consumer can't leave their boat in the water. You understand the benefits of a boat lift. One of the things I went through a little quickly was convenience. If you've got a customer that's coming out of state to use your facility, this will not apply as much. But if you've got a local that's using your facility, if they have their boat on a lift versus on a trailer or in dry storage, they're going to use that boat quite a bit more often, because of the quicker access to the water. In most cases, regardless of lift brand, once they walk up to their slip, in 5 minutes, they can have the boat in the water. In 5 minutes, when they get back, they can have it out of the water. So what that means is they get off early one afternoon, they want to go fishing, they want to go watch the sunset or whatever. It will increase their opportunity to use the boat, which ultimately increases the value of the investment they made in the boat. And so when you couple the convenience and the more frequent use with the protection of the boat, then that's when you really start to see the long-term value of their boating lifestyle. You know, it starts to cost less. The cost is the same, but the return is greater.
Scott, I would add to the benefit list of just the peace of mind, especially for an owner that's distant.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same as if it were sitting in a water tight.
Well, if you're on a floating dock especially, and you got a good four-point tie, which anybody that leaves their boat long-term in that dock, you would hope they had a good four-point tie. To David's point, you know, if you get rough water or heavy wind, that's still going to beat that boat pretty severely. It's also going to beat your dock pretty severely. So the advantage to the dock owner in having the lift is it minimizes that pressure on your dock. The advantage to the customer is their boat's not getting beat up. It may be moving a little bit, but it's moving in a cradle. It's not really hurting the boat. It's not pulling on the cleats. So, yes, that's a good point. And the convenience, because, you know, there's a flip side to that, especially there on Lake Cumberland. There's multiple dry storage options all over the lake. So that customer wants that same peace of mind. He can always pull his lift out and take it to dry storage on his trailer. But, man, that's inconvenient. Can you imagine? It's Sunday. You're wore out. You just had a big weekend with the kids. And now you're going to pull your boat out and take it to dry storage and then drive home to wherever. And then you're going to reverse that process when you come back. The two instances where boats are damaged the most often, and I'm talking minimal damage, are either trailering, whether they're launching or loading, or in docking the boat. Okay? So that's the two instances that customers dislike the most. Well, if you have a boat lift, then you can eliminate the trailering and you can minimize the impact of the docking, because if the boat lift is set up correctly, it can significantly aid in docking. Okay, so that's just another way that it's more convenient and it protects the boat. So if your customer's sold on needing a lift, you're sold on selling the lift because you do want to maximize the investment. You certainly don't want someone else selling lifts into your marina, modifying your dock, and you're not seeing any return on that. I mean, it really is a no-brainer to me, because when it comes to a fixed dock, a suspension lift that goes on your pilings is adding substantial load to those pilings, okay? If it's a floating dock, then that floating lift is adding substantial dead weight to your dock when that lift is down. And also, if it's misloaded or installed incorrectly, it adds substantial strain to the dock when it's supporting the boat. So what you want to know is, whoever's installing that lift is doing it correctly. But in addition to doing it correctly, you also want to know that they're treating your customers the way your customer wants to be treated. And you also want to know that they're minimizing the impact of your dock that the installation causes. And also, they're not leaving trash and, you know, just all those things that goes toward good customer service. You want to have control of that. So by having the dealership there and controlling who does the installation, you're really taking a handhold on that and preventing any issues for your customers, but also any issues for you with a misinstalled piece of what I like to call heavy equipment. The most sold boat lift nationwide on average is 6,000 to 7,000 pounds capacity. That's the size lift. If you take all the manufacturers and average them out, the 6,000 to 7,000 pound range is the number one seller nationwide, okay? Well, you wouldn't want an untrained guy jumping on a forklift with a 6,000 pound capacity and just going nuts, you know, moving stuff. So I make that comparison to say that it's heavy equipment. So it being heavy equipment, you want to know that it was installed correctly. You want to know that the customer has been instructed incorrectly how to use it. And those are just things you're taking control of by having the dealership there at the marina. So any questions on any of that so far? Anybody buying what I'm selling here? Is anybody a believer? Is there anybody that has a marina that's not selling boat lifts now? And let me ask you this, if you don't mind, sir. What type of dock do you have?
Well, we're in the process of renovating the entire marina. We just acquired it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be putting in floating concrete docks.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the process of trying to figure out using lifts.
Is there any lifts in the facility now?
No.
Okay. And are you guys together?
No.
Tell me about your situation.
Same thing, acquired my marina last year.
Mm-hmm. Floating or fixed?
Fixed.
Fixed, okay. And who was the other? And tell me your situation.
Ditto.
Okay, so at the end of the day, you guys are most likely candidates to have to make a decision. Your tenants are not going to want to leave those boats in the water, even for the entire length of the summer. They're going to want to get them out of the water. So what you got to decide is whether or not you want to be a part of that process. My answer to you is, I can guarantee you, if I was in the marina business, I would definitely be selling boat lifts, regardless of my dock style, because your customers are going to want it regardless. You're going to have to either A, not allow them to have boat lifts, or B, allow someone else to benefit 100% from the boat lifts going into your facility. And you guys are the ones investing in all these renovations. So if boat lifts are going to go in, I highly recommend that you guys be involved in selling them. Yes, sir.
Just as an example, I mean, I'm not familiar with Hydro Hoist as a brand. I know you're talking generically.
Yes.
But most of the floating lifts that I'm aware of take up a pretty big amount of footprint of water compared to the boat itself. I mean, boats are, most lake boats anyway, are
What water are you on, sir? Where are you located?
A lake in northern New Jersey.
Okay. Well, in regard to floating lifts in particular, they will typically match the style of the dock, okay? Whether it's a, let's say you have single slips. So you have one boat and a slip, and the slips, depending on the size of the slip, it's 10, 12, 14 feet wide. Okay. Right. Okay. And that's on the easy dock. So, but do you have a...
It could make them wider, but...
Yeah, but let me ask you this. In that 9-8, do you have a... You have a finger on each side of the boat, right? So it's one boat per slip. Because you'll see other dock situations, it's two boats per slip. It'll be double wide, so there's not a finger in between the boats.
What's the width of a 6,000-pound hydrohoist?
It is a 6,000-pound hydrohoist. Is built to match the width of the slip.
So you just, can you fit them in a 9-foot-8 slip?
Yes. And now, let me say this, in all fairness, that's true for hydrohoist, polylift, boat floater, econolift, any of your floating lift manufacturers that are designed for U-shaped slips can adapt to the slip size within reason. Now, it can get too narrow and it can get too wide. Typically, you need the slip to be at least a foot wider than the beam of the boat. And then if...
8-foot boats, 9-foot-8 slips.
Be perfect, no problem. And on the flip side, if you have double wide slips, two boats and a slip, then you have front mount style lifts as well that they attach on the front and they pivot, really, they just cantilever up and down. It accomplishes the same thing, just in a different way. And that's what I said earlier, is regardless of your dock style, there is some sort of boat lift that'll work for you.
And
hydrohoist in particular is floating, strictly floating. Yeah, basically you'll have air tanks, and this is true for really all of your floating boat lift styles. A couple of exceptions, I'll point them out, but your air tank's full of air. The air displacing the air tank displacing the water is giving you the buoyancy, okay? When you open the valve, it breaks the airlock at the top. As that air escapes, there's exhaust holes in the bottom of the tanks, which allow the tanks to flood. And, of course, as they flood, they lose buoyancy. It goes down. It launches your boat. Okay, that's true for the vast majority of your floating boat lifts. An exception would be Sunstream. The Sunstream float lift is kind of a hybrid. It is a hydraulic system on top of floats, and so those floats don't sink. They just kind of roll out of the way, and the hydraulics goes down and launches the boat. Accomplishes the same thing, just completely different mechanics. All your floating boat lifts, though, the vast majority of them are air tanks.
Did I hear that Sunstream stopped manufacturing that because of warranty issues?
Not the float lift. They still manufacture that. They had a product, and I'm not a Sunstream expert. I mean, I hear stuff just like you guys do. They had another model called the V-Lift, and They had some issues with it, and I don't think it's currently available, but the float lift is one of their bread and butter. As far as their floating lift, it's their bread and butter lift.
So on floating lift, what's the annual maintenance? Is there a cost associated with it? Is it just something that you need to dock
in up to do? Okay, that's a great question. On any boat lift, whether it's floating or fixed, either yourself, your customer, whoever, but if it's in your marina, it doesn't cost you anything to, you know, you're walking your docks anyway. Have your guys look at the boat lifts when they're walking the docks. Two things you want to look at is the clamp. Typical floating boat lift is going to have four clamps, two on each side. You want a secure attachment to the dock. And then your arm pivot bolt, which attaches the boat lift to that clamp, you want to check those out and make certain that they're locked down. If the dock bracket is properly attached and the arm bolt is properly attached, you're going to eliminate the vast majority of problems. Beyond that, I tell all my in-use customers, look at your lift at the end of the season. Just visually inspect it. Look at the dock brackets. Look at the arm pivot bolts. And then just kind of visually look over the rest of the lift, make sure everything's good and tight. If they'll do that at the first of the year and they'll do that at the last of the year, they're going to avoid most problems. As far as maintenance items that you may have to replace at some point, you know, blower motor can go bad. Electrical surges are tough on the ground fault, you know, GFCIs and that sort of thing. But really the two maintenance items you'll have is maybe a valve, maybe a blower motor. Yes, sir. Yes, a lot of people do that. Instead of having a control on every slip, they'll have a universal air supply just to save space on the dock, yes.
My problem is electricity on the docks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want power on my docks.
Right.
I'd rather have air on my docks.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, there's a couple of different options, but what you're talking about daisy chaining, there are docks that do that, yes. And they do it not so much to avoid electricity, because the two that I'm aware of that I'm thinking of right away have electricity. They just don't want the control stands on the dock.
So when they're starting to ban the inverters on some lakes due to fire hazards for AC motors.
That is correct.
Because they are not grounded to any UIC standards, so that's something you have to look out for.
Well, and also what happens is the inverter won't be rated for the amount of juice that it's drawing, and you get just a huge heat buildup. So,
surge about 3 times of what the inverter is. So, you have a 1500 watt motor in section, and it blows the inverter.
That's correct. What he's talking about is an electrical motor. Let's say you have a 10 amp motor on a 120 volt circuit. Well, the running wattage on that motor is, you know, 1200 watts. But on startup, on the initial startup, that can surge as much as 3 times. So that 1,200 watts is 3,600 watts for a second or so. And yes, that kills your inverter, or it causes a heat issue. Back to... Well, you know, the restrictions on AC power on docks, it's getting harder and harder and harder to have AC power on a dock because...
Well, under the 2017 NEC, you have to have ground fault monitoring.
No, I know we looked into it. We just said the price point in our area just isn't there. We'll never get the money back.
So you recommend leaving a floating lift unplugged when not used?
It will eliminate electrical surge, especially in you live in an area that's pretty prone to thunderstorms. If you get an electrical surge from lightning, if the control is not plugged in, it probably isn't going to hurt it. You know, the downside to that is if it happens to be a consumer that has a remote control on their lift, then they just negated the value of that if they have to go down and plug it in before they can use it. Doesn't negate all the value, but man, I'm like that. I go on vacation, I unplug everything in the house anyway, you know, so, but yes.
What's the proper margin on the, because we just had our first remote clicker weeks ago. Is there anything, is there money to be made there?
Well, typically, depends on the deal that you cut with the manufacturer, but typically you're making a set percentage regardless. So the higher the, you know, a remote costs more than a standard control. So the retail price just went up. If you're making 20%, and I'm just picking a number out of the air, 20% of 6,500 is more than 20% of 5,500. So, yes, I mean, anytime the retail price goes up, your percentage of return is going to go up, unless it's a lease. Personally, I wouldn't be putting remotes on lease units, but as far as maintenance, we talked about the floating lift. On bottom standing lifts, the biggest thing you have to keep an eye on is if the lift starts to settle, it'll get out of level and it can bind up a little bit. On overhead lifts, the absolute number one thing on suspension lifts is your cable. Inspect your cable at least twice a year. A frayed cable is a catastrophic failure on a suspension lift. But back to the question about the slip size, really, if you have a foot more than the beam, you can find a workable solution. And if you're in a double wide slip, there's workable solutions. So there's almost a boat lift solution for any dock application.
Is the daisy chain high volume, low pressure?
Well, it would have to be high volume, low pressure. High pressure in this situation really doesn't work on a. Yeah, you're really on a floating boat lift, even under full load, you're maxing out at about 4 PSI. And what will happen is under high pressure, it'll blow through. Instead of volumizing, it'll blow through. Yeah, you'd need to, but once you pressurize the system, if everybody's not trying to use it at the same time, the guy at the very end's got the same pressure the guy at the front end's got. Once it's pressurized, it's kind of like water pressure on a line. But you got to be able to keep up with it, and you've got to be able to maintain about on the average floating lift, you got to be able to maintain 4 psi over 10 minutes max. Now, if it's a larger lift, that time can increase a little bit, but the PSI really isn't, unless it's a back end. Now, on a back end lift, they're drafting deeper, so you have to overcome more water pressure too, but you're still only jumping up to about 6 PSI. And a typical floating lift's not gonna draft enough that you're gonna have to get, you know, beyond, I mean, 7 PSI would be really high. And that, of course, the higher the lift gets, that decreases, you know, substantially as it moves. Any other questions on any of that?
One of the advantages that you miss,
thinks you miss.
There's a major advantage to the boat on the lift. The clients that we have want their boat on a lift. That has nothing to do with the longevity of the boat.
Nothing to do with the longevity, nothing to do with convenience. Oh, right. Well, we talked about that. We didn't miss that. We talked about cleaning, not having to clean the boat.
You can't get this stuff.
Well, true story, depending on the water, and it really doesn't matter. You can be on the cleanest. I'll use this guy for an example. Tim's Ford Lake down in southern Tennessee is some beautiful water. But you leave your boat in there for 3 days, and to your point, you'll never make it look like new again. So, yes, that's definitely an advantage. And that goes into long-term value also. I mean, whether...
we get paid to acid wash them at the end of the season and they come up looking like new, but...
How many times can you...
With towboats are very vain about how the boat looks.
Right. Well, I mean, and I don't blame them. I mean, honestly, whoever thought, and I don't want to show my age, but whoever thought 20 years ago that people would be paying $150,000 for a towboat, you know, a 22-foot towboat. You know, so yes, if I had that kind of money tied up in a vessel, especially one that small, I mean, people tend to equate value by size, and that has really went out the window the last 10 years. So yes, if I got a super cool boat with awesome graphics on it, I want it to stay like that, which is really good for all of us because You know, we're trying to help them accomplish that, but we're also trying to make a buck, you know. At the end of the day, none of us are doing any of this for a hobby.
So then you pull out these floating boat lifts every winter?
Typically, no, because in a situation where you're having to pull out like that, normally the docks are getting pulled too, and normally that's shallower water than what we operate in. So really, if you were to divide the country, really anything north of, let's call it Ohio, is typically going to be a roller lift or a freestanding lift. Anything south of there is going to start to be a floating lift. And typically they'll go in docks that stay year-round as well. Sorry, she beat you to the draw. If you don't mind, ma'am, where are you located?
Kansas.
Okay. So you're right on the bubble of where, you know, you could have a mild winter or you could have a real stupid, like, frozen winter. And your docks are floating, right? You had a question.
I was just curious, when you work with marinas in general, do you do plans to kind of, like, work out an entire dock, or do you do more conversion of, like, let's do a slip at a time, the consumer that buys in?
Well, I'll tell you this. The salesman in me wants to say, if you got 50 slips, you need 50 lifts. But the reality is, you don't need a lift until a boat goes in that slip. And it's easier on you to set it up for the boat that's going on it on the front end. So,
our issue is we're at max capacity.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no such thing, because it comes down to what size equipment that you're buying and what style equipment that you're buying. But typically on a 6,000 pound deal, you're probably spending, by the time you, depending on how close you are to somebody that can do the actual work for you, or if you guys want to train and do it yourself, you're investing around $7,000 in that lift. Now, if I was in your situation, I would walk before I ran. I would offer the lifts for sale, because that's going to tell you right away whether or not there's a market for it. Because if nobody's buying them, that doesn't necessarily mean that nobody's going to lease them, but it's a good indication that there's not a huge demand.
When I was reading in Indiana, we'll charge a couple grand extra for summer for a boat lift versus just park slip. If it's a couple grand, it might be or 2 more grand for a boat lift for the summer. If they have a $7,000 investment, they're paying back, and typically, depending on the slip,
If you're in a marina that truly has no boat lifts and you put a couple in, you're going to be amazed at the demand that comes out of the woodwork. And one other thing I'd say, not really related to boat lifts, but related to dockage in general, if you're full and you have a waiting list, then to his point, it's time to raise your prices. No, you take your investment in the lift, which let's call it $7,000, okay? And then you divide that by the national average is 36 months.
Oh.
And I was going to say it's basically less than $200 a month. Correct. The short answer to that question, depending on the dock style, is no. Normally, a fixed dock is going to be a fixed lift, a freestanding lift, or a suspension lift, and a floating dock is going to be a floating lift. Typically, the lift style will match the dock style. And there are exceptions to that, especially with some of the lighter docks, like your easy docks could be in really shallow water. And if you have those on a piling system so that they're not moving back and forth or just moving up and down, if you're in shallow water, then a freestanding lift still may be the better option for you.
Mm-hmm.
Golden boat lift, right.
It works. But now you're talking 20 to 30,000.
The other thing you have to consider is your water depth. What you're really looking at is your water depth in season. So if you're depending on your summer pool, your lift may not, or your water may not be deep enough for a floating lift. You may have to look at a suspension lift. I mean, water depth is really never an issue on a suspension lift. If you've got enough water to power the boat in, then you typically have enough water for a suspension lift. And that's almost as true for a freestanding lift. Of the three styles, the floating lift always takes more room because of the depth of the air tank. For example, on a shallow water hydro hoist, the least water we can get into is 23 inches plus the hull draft of the boat. And so in most cases, 36 inches is a bare minimum. And anything less than that, all of a sudden your boat's captured, because if the lift can't go down far enough to release it, you can't get the boat off. That's why, again, you got to look at each application to see which equipment is best for you. Well, here's the deal. Your bread and butter is your dockage, okay? If you're full and you have more room on your permit and you have the capital, build more docks. Absolutely. If you can afford the insurance and you can afford the expansion, because that's where your initial bank is. Because remember, even though it's a big accessory, a boat lift is just add-on revenue to your main line of revenue. I mean, everything else that you do, the dock is the reason the customers come, okay? So you add a restaurant, you make a little more money. You add a ship store. Maybe you start selling Yeti coolers. I mean, everything else is secondary to your dockage, because you can have a marina without all those other things, but you don't have all those other things if you don't have a marina. So, man, I'd maximize my lease. You may have to do it, 20 slips at a time or 10 slips at a time or whatever. But to your exact point, there's a marina in East Tennessee, and they still have quite a bit of room on their lease, and they add about 20 slips every year. And every time they add those 20 slips, they almost immediately buy 10 boat lifts. And they lease them. They'll sell them too, but they buy them regardless because they know they can fill them up. Okay? But let's say you don't have room to expand. Well, it's the law of diminishing returns. But as far as whether you buy a used one or buy a new one, you can only buy a used one if it's available. If you don't have turnover a customer and they're not letting that product go, then you got to look at it that way too. But let's talk for a minute about the most important part is what you're asking about is maximizing your dealership. So first question for everybody. At all of your facilities, let me ask you first. Who's responsible for sales at your marina? You?
Yeah.
Okay. And what is your role there?
Marina manager.
Okay. How about you guys? Who is responsible for sales at your facility? Just the two of you? David?
Really, everyone's responsible.
Don't steal my thunder, man. You've been in this thing before, okay? All right. What about you, ma'am? Who's responsible for sales at your facility? Yes, ma'am.
My GM.
Your GM. Okay. Really, what I'm hearing is, for the most part, whoever the GM or the harbor master is responsible for sales. Is there a good consensus there? Okay, you're all wrong. All right. Who's responsible for sales at any organization? It's everybody there, okay? It doesn't matter what role they play. If they have any interaction at all with your customer, they are a salesperson for you or a salesperson against you, okay? So how do you maximize the return on your dealership? And this is regardless of brand, regardless of style, okay? First of all, signage. Now, with that being said, there's some governing bodies that don't allow signs. I get that. So you may not have signage. But if you can have signage, that's you know, signage is marketing, okay? That says, hey, we sell boat lifts. You're telling that to everybody, whether they need a boat lift or not, okay? Inside, you know, your ship store, if you don't have a ship store, in your sales office, but at least wherever you write your dockage contracts, okay, product brochures. When you move to product brochures, you've got away from marketing and you've got a little closer to sales. A lot of people think sales and marketing are the same thing. Well, they're cousins, but they're not first cousins, okay? The most important thing is training your employees, okay? If you've got multiple boats and you got a dock hand that's walking those slips, you've already taught him to be friendly to all the customers. Hey, how are you doing? You know, try to learn their names. People love for people to remember their name because not only does it make them feel important, but it makes them feel more looked out for, okay? If a random dock guy's walking the dock and he says, you know, hey, Mr. Smith, how are you? He's going to feel a whole lot better. He's going, man, that guy knows me. He's really going to look out for me when I'm not here. Well, you want that. And you also want to do that, but you want that impression on them. But if you're selling boat lifts, that dock hand, you know, he's not going to be the guy that does the deal, but he could say, man, that's a gorgeous boat. You ought to get that on a lift. Well, he's planted a seed. It's no different than saying to him, hey, did you see those new Yeti coolers we got in the ship store? Man, they're awesome. Well, you know what? He may not sell them that cooler, but he just planted a seed, okay? Biggest thing you want is for him to be very happy to see them coming and invite them back when they leave. But at the end of the day, everybody's responsible for sales. So what do you got to do? You got to train your employees. Because what is the worst trap you can fall into at any sales-based organization is having order takers instead of sales makers, okay? Now let me give you an example. Let's just say that your front desk person, you know, they're a friendly enough person, but they don't want to be a pushy salesperson, okay? And people, you know, they're going to the lake to relax. They're not going to get hassled by Joey Suzu. Okay, I get it. But at the same time, if they don't know, you know, first of all, the most disappointing thing to me ever as a boat lift guy is to go into a marina that is a dealership. They got a sign up, they got brochures, and the guy behind the counter doesn't really even know they sell boat lifts. Okay, well, he's not making a real hard effort to sell a guy a boat lift. So you want sales makers versus order takers, and that's regardless of what you're selling. And I don't care if a guy makes a purchase that morning, if he grabs a bag of ice and some snacks at your ship store, you want the person that rings them up to say, hey, don't forget, you know, tonight's shrimp bowl, okay? Or, hey, man, we got a new steak special at the restaurant. Check that out. Because all they're doing is planting a seed. You know, they're not going to make that sale right then, but they're planting a seed. Well, when it comes to boat lifts, that's not a notion buy, okay? First of all, the person either needs it or they don't. Well, if they're a tenant in your facility and they do not have their boat on a lift, they need one. So they're automatically a candidate, okay? So when you have especially a new customer that you're signing up for dockage, as soon as you get that name on the bottom line, the person that's signing them up should say, hey, are you bringing a boat lift in with you? Do you own a boat lift? Well, that doesn't sound like a sales pitch. That sounds like a question. Do you have a boat lift? You're going to be bringing it in? Well, they may say yes, you know, and they may say no. But if they say yes, your next question should be, okay, great. What brand is it? Well, you want to know what brand it is because you want to know that it's compatible with your dock, and you also want to know that it's quality. Okay, but more importantly, once you figure out the brand, you want to know who is installing it. Okay. Are they planning on installing it themselves? I had the fortune of meeting some real good people about 6 months ago. And when I say real good people, they were just a gorgeous couple, and they were so nice. And they came in, and the lady was missing the thumb on her left hand. She was missing the thumb on her left hand because her and her husband bought a used boat lift. And they looked at it, and they said, yeah, we're not going to spend that $500. We're going to move it ourselves. Not knowing what they were doing, they pulled the four arm bolts out. Well, when they pulled the fourth one out, you know what the arms did? They went, boom, straight down. And it literally severed her thumb. And so, number one, who's installing it? Because you don't want your customer to get hurt. Number two, who's installing it? Because you don't want Joe Bob with no insurance down here on your dock cutting himself with a saw and all of a sudden suing you because he happened to be on your property. And number two, you don't want Joe Bob installing it. And if there's anybody in here named Joe Bob, I am not picking on you, okay? I'm just, you know, let me say that. But you don't want a guy with no insurance. You don't want a guy that don't know what he's doing, okay? If the lift is, I don't care if it's the best boat lift in the world, if it's not installed and set up correctly, it's not going to support that boat correctly, and it is going to put strain on your dock, and something could break. The lift could break. The dock could break. The lift and the dock could break. The boat could end up broke, and somebody could end up hurt. So they should ask, do you own a boat lift for no other reason than for you guys to know what's going on in your facility, okay? Now, the magic answer you're looking for is no, okay? So when they say no, that the next thing your employee should say or you should say is, man, why not, okay? So now you got an opportunity to make a sale. Not only to make a sale, but you got an opportunity to help that customer, help them, you know, better their experience. And so then you just go back through. You start all over with, hey, let me tell you why you need a boat lift. And you talk about electrolysis, and you talk about wind and wake, and you talk about that super clean hull that, you know, you don't have that line that you can never get off of. You talk about not having a trailer. You talk about all those things. And then they say, man, that's great. Where can I get one of those? You can get it right here. Let me take care of it. Well, guess what? That you're already their new best friend. They just made a deal with you. They're getting ready to spend their limited summertime leisure activity with you. So who else do they want to do business with? I mean, if I was in a marina and I had a boat lift, I would want to know that that was just an extension of the protection they were already giving me. So there's nobody I would rather buy one from. But they can't buy it from you if you don't offer it. And even if you do offer it, they can't buy it from you if they don't know. Okay? So you can't depend on signs and you can't depend on brochures. What you really got to depend on is your people asking the right questions. And it doesn't have to come across as pushy. I mean, a guy can say, hey, man, I'm not interested. I just spent XYZ. Hey, I get it. You know what? They still know that you offer it. They still know that they need it. And they're probably going to come back to you anyway. But none of that happens if your employee doesn't engage new and existing customers. And that's probably the most important thing is, you know, as far as elevating your revenue, is getting your employee bought in to engage them. And I know in busy season, especially, your employee don't need one more thing to worry about. But, hey, let's face it. Each customer we get, regardless what business we're in, we get limited bites at that apple. And you want to maximize. And you want to maximize the return on your investment. And that's how you do it. And sometimes you have to train your people so that they do the job that you need them to do. All right, so you guys heard the spiel. Is there anybody here now that thinks, man, he's just wrong. There's no reason for me to have a boat lift dealership. Because if so, I'd really like to hear that so we could talk about it a little bit. We're just talking about it in general, okay? It's just one more way for you to add revenue to your marina development.
Question. How do zebra mussels affect boat lifts?
Zebra mussels typically do not affect boat lifts other than they help you sell them. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Now, if I could wave a magic wand, I'm going to tell y'all right now, I'd be the world's worst sales guy. There would be no zebra mussels in any of our water because it's despite our best efforts, we can't control them. And I think that's just like, you know, I don't want to get into politics at all, but we can't control Mother Nature. Despite our best efforts, she's bigger than us. It gets proven time and time again, and zebra mussels are eventually going to be everywhere, and you certainly don't want them on your boat. Well,
I should probably ask an insurance person, but
well,
I give that question 2 thumbs up, by the way.
Well, let me say this. If you're leasing the boat lift, your customer shouldn't be working on it, okay? They shouldn't be modifying it, okay? But I tell each of you this. I don't care what brand, okay? I don't care what style. Like I mentioned earlier, average boat lift is 6,000 to 7,000 pounds. That's the number one seller nationwide. That's heavy equipment. You lease your customer a lift, in my opinion, it is incumbent upon you, as part of that deal, to go out and teach them how to use it. Again, I wouldn't turn a new guy loose that's never driven a forklift. I wouldn't put him on a 6,000 pound lift and say, hey, go unload that truck. Okay, I would expect him, my product, something to get damaged. Well, same thing's true with the boat lift. They do provide all these benefits we talked about, but the customer's got to know how to get their boat over it. They got to know how to line it up, and they got to know how to operate it. And they got to know where not to put their hands, okay? It's incumbent upon you to teach them that. If it's a new installation and it's a customer you sold the lift, it's incumbent upon whoever's installing it, at least the way we do it. Now, I can't speak for every company, but What we offer is factory certified assembly and installation and setup, and also hands on instruction. And you want that, regardless of what brand you use, you want that hands on instruction to avoid things like that. I mean, that's an extreme case, but you know it can happen. You know, you don't want your child sitting on the dock finger with their feet dangling in the water, and somebody lets the boat lift down. You know, I mean, that's just, it seems like just common sense, but people don't know. That's why most remote controls, when you operate them, there will be something on the control unit that indicates, hey, something's happening. On the remote that we sell, there's a strobe. And that way, let's say it's the neighbor's kid. They've come over into your slip, and they're sitting there. Maybe they're fishing. Maybe they're just playing. But that strobe starts going off. It at least gets somebody's attention, hey, something's happening. Because you don't want anybody to get hurt. But the odds of them getting hurt on a lease lift ought to be almost zero. What else? I know somebody's got a good question for me. Throw it out there.
Scott, I'll make a comment. I'm down on the saltwater in Beaufort, as you know, and we have 8 feet of tide, and all the growth on the bottom and all the other stuff you guys got. We see some four-post boat lifts being installed in marinas from a fixed dock with no ability to give the operator access when the boat's in the water other than to ride the boat lift down. And it amazes me, because if you read any operator's manual for four-post cable lift, it says that shall not be done. In my first life that involved in the overhead crane business, I can tell you it's also against federal law. They are not elevators. They don't have broken rope safety devices. They don't have a lot of things that are required to handle people hoist. And so as a marina, I think you've got to be quite aware of the liability that you might be accepting if you're going to go that route. The floaters, I love them, as Scott knows, and they do a great job, and they don't have near the safety issues that a four-post crew has.
Chuck, what's the name of your company?
Well, Boat Float.
Boat Float, yep. Just for everybody's information, Chuck manufactures a floating boat lift as well. It's not a swing arm lift. It's more of a one-piece deal. I really like it, but it's we'll debate that later. But Chuck builds a good product, so you guys, if you get a minute, stop by and see him on the trade show floor tomorrow. He can show it to you.
Sell a new lift, it's his folks coming out to do the installation.
Thank you.
But if we have a customer who's bringing in their own lift, we absolutely specify that lift has to be installed by a competent, trained company to do that. And there's several people around who fit that bill in our area anyway. But we will not allow an individual owner or his neighbor or somebody else just to come and install a lift. There's too much at risk, both in the way of damage to the dock and an improper installation, as Scott pointed out, is not good for anyone. So.
All right, guys, I promised we wouldn't go over. We have officially gone over. So I want to give you the three takeaways that I wanted you to get from this, okay? Boat lifts should not intimidate you. They're bigger than a Coke, but selling them is about the same process, okay? Especially if you're letting the manufacturer handle the installation for you or a certified contractor handle the installation for you. It's really the same thing. You own the dock, but more importantly, you invested in the dock. Whether you built it, bought it, whatever, doesn't matter. That's your blood, sweat, and tears, your cash out there. So who should benefit from that first? Anyone? Who should benefit from that first? You guys should, okay? If you're an employee, then you want your employer to do well too. So you should sell boat lifts. If you're a marina facility and it is applicable at all, you should sell boat lifts. Two reasons for that. You'll make a little more money and you'll do a better job of taking care of your customer. Third takeaway, and the most important one from this, is regardless of what you're renting, leasing, selling at your facility, number one way to maximize the return is get all your employees on board. Remember, everybody there is a salesperson, and then they just got to take a little bit of initiative to help you out, okay? And, you know, sometimes it's as simple as asking a question. Are you bringing a boat lift in with you? And the reason I encourage people to ask it that way, are you bringing a boat lift in with you? Because if I'm a new boater and the marina asks me that, first thing I'm going to think is, should I? Should I be bringing a boat lift in with me? Am I missing something here? So it's not a threatening, it's just a question. And then you go from there and you go through the process.
My answer is going to be, if they say yes, too bad because you can't bring yours, you got to buy mine. You know, I mean, I wouldn't let you work on your boat lift at my marina for...
And that's a good point. It's your dock, okay? That's your investment, okay? And what you're leasing, okay, is access, all right? So if you go in and you rent a slip from XYZ Marina, what you're buying is access, and you're buying guaranteed access to this slip. What you're not buying is the right to make a physical change to that asset, okay? So that means that, yes, by all means, the marina can tell me you cannot attach a boat lift to my dock. Or if you attach a boat lift to my dock, it has to be XYZ person. And ultimately, if you're willing to draw that line in the sand, you can say, you cannot put a boat lift in my dock unless you buy it from me. Now, the other side of that is, those are all within your rights. The other side is, that customer can say, well, you know what, I'm going to vote with my feet and go somewhere else. But most of them won't. I mean, honestly, if they're bought into that facility, it's where they want to be, that's not going to happen. But regardless of how deep a line in the sand you want to draw, you do have a right to profit first from your facility, and you do have a right to protect your facility. And certainly, those should be takeaways today as well. The biggest thing is to maximize, and at the end of the day is, man, you can have 50 things for sale at your facility, but if you don't ever sell any of them, you're not making any money. Right? So it all goes back to asking for the sale, or at least asking the right questions to get to a sale.
To speak to your slide deck, I've always been of the opinion that you give everybody business cards.
Business card?
Yeah. Even like people who are pumping gas and hand out a card.
Mm-hmm.
It empowers them to feel like salespeople.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
It's inexpensive.
To his point, my installers, David was mentioning my installers, they all have business cards for the salespeople, whichever organization. And this goes beyond just us. We have other warehouses as well. But they do that all the time. If they're installing a lift for this customer, and this guy over here asks about one, they're going to be able to give him a card to the person he ought to call. That's a good point. I appreciate you bringing that up. Guys, that's all I got. So yes, sir. Right.
Has been done for 2 years. It doesn't matter because once it's installed, it generally happens. So
it's like an attachment fee, basically.
Rather than tell them they can't do it, you just charge them.
Right.
And they're very happy.
And a lot of Marines do exactly that, and I should have mentioned it sooner. Exactly. So what he's referring to, a lot of Marines will call it an attachment fee. Let's say that you got a lift and it's less than a year old, you want to bring it in with you, and you don't want to lose that customer. Because everybody's not going to draw that deep line in the sand that you're talking about. Believe me, man, I do this. But I'm just saying, though. You say to them, all right, we're going to let you bring your lift in. However, we have to protect our investment, and we want to protect you as well. We have to insist that we take care of the installation, or we arrange for the installation, and there's a, you know, $1,500, $2,000 fee for that, and it also guarantees that when you take your lift back out, we can take our slip back to the way it was before, whether it's replacing band boards, floats, whatever. That may be enough of a difference to make them say, and you can waive that fee. You say, but hey, I sell lifts. If you'll buy it from me, then man, I'll waive that attachment fee. Okay, so there's other ways to get where you're wanting to be. But if not, at least you are still profiting a little bit from your facility.
Also, it's damaged other than the 2x6 or
whatever. Absolutely.
So we know that's where the damage tree also. And people don't care about that.
Yeah, people understand. I mean, they don't want their stuff torn up. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you rent a storage unit, you don't get to rip the walls out or whatever. I mean, it's the same thing, really. At the end of the day, you're paying for access on the front end. Anything else is going to cost you a little bit.
So you give them a benefit, you charge them for
it. Exactly.
As opposed to, no, you can't, but you buy it from me. You're not making $1,000 on a lift anyway.
Look, the lakes in our general area, not our lake, but the lakes in our area, if you don't buy the boat from the dealer, you can't put the boat in the slip. He's got to store it, winterize it, wrap it, or you can't get a slip. And I mean, it's just a different market. And every time I hear somebody's fault, I'm like, oh my God, what's wrong, Pat? You can't be charging enough money.
That is an excellent point. If you're full and you got a waiting list, it's definitely time to raise those rates.
And when I bought my marina, I doubled the rate and lost half the customers, filled the guys up on either side of me. I still was making more money than they were with half the customers.
Well, when you doubled the rate and lost half the customers, half the headaches went away, but the revenue volume remained the same. See? And you were able to, you know, bring up the quality of the facility. Yes, sir.
Scott, on installation, I'm just curious, does your company or any other lift company offer training for a marine employee?
Yes. I don't want to make this a hydro hoist commercial. That was not my intent. And I can't speak to what other companies do or do not do. But we have a corporate program that if you want, let's say you called me up and you said, you know what, Scott, I want to be able to move my lifts or service them or even install them, then yes, we have a certification process you can go through. It typically takes really 2 days. There's one hands-on day and one classroom day. And we can do that for you on site. No, there's no cost. But normally how we would handle it is this. We would wait until you ordered your next lift, and then you or whoever you want to go through the program would work with our guys for the hands-on portion. And then the classroom portion, what I typically will do is I'll try to get 3 or 4 facilities at once so I can knock them all out in a day. But it typically takes a day to do the lift and a day to go through the classroom, and you get a certification that's good for 2 years. I'm sorry.
So you're saying you guys would fly out to us and go through the lift It basically became a dealer. We're one of the Shoremaster's largest dealers in the nation. So I already actually got, I have hydro ports in the ground already.
Right. Yes, what we used to do is we used to offer a school twice a year, and we would try to have it in two different locations to make it easier for everybody to come. And we would do everything in a set location. We'd have the assembly, the installation, and then the classroom all at once. And what we found is the logistics of doing that and getting everybody together is getting to be tough. So we're going to a trainer system so that we can come to you. And where did you say you're located?
Massachusetts.
Okay, so more than likely that would either be myself or, I want to make sure I tell you the right name. At the corporate office we have a trainer. Gosh, guys, I'm sorry, I'm old and my memory's failing me. It's not Kelby, but it's Caleb. Caleb, yes. But yeah, we'll get you squared away because we definitely don't want you to start putting them in wrong. Now the hydro ports, it really doesn't apply, but I'm talking about the boat lifts, yes.
You'll be the trade report tomorrow, right?
Yes, sir. We'll be on the floor tomorrow. And also your primary guy is being in Massachusetts right now is Ron Martin, and he'll be here tomorrow as well.
Oh,
all right, guys, now we've went way over.